are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Yeah. I never meant to kiss about
ain't
you.
Ain't giving up a second thought about you, no. Ghetto people.
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell
ghetto
me.
People.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people.
Where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
I'm running like a red disease.
I'm running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You gotta learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshie. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. And I know if it wasn't, you got it done anyways, because that's the kind of brother and a sister that you is. And we appreciate you for it. Love you for it. Honestly, we really do love brothers and sisters with a stick-to-itiveness attitude and a mindset that they're going to get it done regardless, especially as it relates to our independence, our self-determination, our liberation, and our sovereignty as African people. I mean, if you have a stick-to-itive attitude that you're going to make $1 million, you know, whatever how it's going to come about, whether I got to sell drugs or rip somebody off, or whether I got to work in a field where I know it's going to be a while to do that, but I've got a stick-to-itive attitude because I've got to get that million. Yeah, I hear you. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives, which is Time for an Awakening Media, timeforanawakening.com. Click on programs, and you'll find that there. We're going to be shopping these programs up. And I want to thank my good brother, Brother Kwaku, for all of his assistance. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Following this program on Mondays and Wednesdays, is the Black People Matrix from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. with Brother Franklin Jones. On Mondays and Wednesdays, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., the Black People Matrix with Franklin Jones. Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming out of Philadelphia from 6 to 8. Following Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Following that is Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey from 9 to 10. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays. And then on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 as well. Thursdays is Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. on Thursdays. Relationships with Joy and Troy. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, brothers and sisters, that's Time for an Awakening. Every Friday from 8 p.m. until with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore on Saturdays at 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Saturday Sports Talk. Then on Sunday at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not me. That's right, brothers and sisters, it is Sister POC
in her program, Revive, on Sundays from 11 to 1. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., it's once again time for an awakening. Good program last night, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Very spirited. With Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, time for an awakening. Every Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, it's the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media. Monday through Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern from 10 to 12 a.m. The Warren Ballantyne Show. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. It is the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. It's WeBuyBlack.com. The products they have, please go online and shop. Pick up that soap. All these products are produced by us. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall, so if you're in the Atlanta area, WeBuyBlack.com. They'll have that laundry detergent. They'll have other things that you can buy and purchase that are produced by us. The batteries, toothbrushes, the soaps. I don't know, so many things. Believe me. Check it out. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bamani Tahimba is taking our brothers and sisters once again to the motherland. Go online to AfricaForTheAfricans.org. AfricaForTheAfricans.org and the number to call, Brother Bamani Tahimba, 404-931-9429, 404-931-9429. He has a trip coming up in November. It's going to South Africa, Johannesburg and Cape Town, November 22nd to December 2nd. And then at the end of December, December 24th to January 4th, 2020, he's going back to Ghana, West Africa. And you can check out online to find out if you want to possibly be on that trip, and you can do that. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Shrine of the Black Madonna, where the Kwanzaa celebration will be held this Saturday. That's right. It's Kwanzaa celebration. Say that. Marcus Garvey's birthday is this Saturday, August 17th. I don't know. I picked up the shrine piece and I saw the Kwanzaa kit and threw it into my mind. They do have Kwanzaa kits at Shrine of Black Madonna for sale. Shrine of Black Madonna is located in the West End and here in Atlanta. And the hours are Wednesday through Saturday from 12 to 7, Sunday from 1 to 3. And they have clothing. They have artwork. They have figurines. They have everything. They have the red, black, and green shoes. Yes, they have Kwanzaa kits. That's right. They have books. They have books. And if they don't have the book that you're looking for, believe me, they'll get it. They also have a class every Saturday. And Sister Queen Aliyah invited me to make a presentation at the class, and I would be honored to do so. It's every Saturday, free and open to the public. Open to the public. 1:30 p.m. until 3:30, and Baba Olatunji is the instructor. Outstanding work. If you cannot make that class, but you like the information, the Know Thyself class, they have a multimedia library. Brothers and sisters, it is the most extensive American African or African history library, the most extensive cultural library of its kind, with over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, over 2,000 books. It is 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment at your disposal, at your fingertips. You should, hey, I got it. It's out. It is great. Another bookstore we promote, because hey, I used to tell the young people I used to work with back in Milwaukee, you know, my days off from the fire department, I would go into schools and talk to our people, talk to our young people. In fact, I used to tell them all the time, what I'm going to provide for you, you will not get in these schools. I was in public schools, but it didn't make any difference. It could have been a charter choice. The only school that I could make that claim would obviously be an African-centered school. But I would go into that class, I would say, hey, the most important thing that you can do is read. With comprehension and understanding, the most important thing you can do. In fact, in the religion of El Islam, there's only one miracle, and that is when God told Prophet Muhammad to read. He said, I cannot read. He said, read. I said, I cannot read. He said, read. And he began to read. Reading is the most important thing we as a people. And I know a lot of us just, you know, look at the computer, look at our phones and so forth. We have to read. And so go to the Medu bookstore. The Medu bookstore is located in Greenbrier Mall, right next to We Buy Black. Their kiosk, the kiosk that We Buy Black, right there is the Medu bookstore. Right there. 404-346-3263. 404-346-3263. The Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And then the other bookstore is Brother Ajamu. Brother Gazimde Ajamu with the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia. Number to call is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. He has the red, black, and green shoes. He has books. He has T-shirts and jackets, all kind of good stuff that brother has there at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. I got to get the name of that vegan restaurant next door. It's outstanding food. Got to get that and broadcast that. So, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Join Us Lifting Us every Thursday for the Thursday night broadcast at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk, and the number to call is 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Thursday night broadcast. Go online to usliftingus.com and become a member of ULU. Become a member. Go onto the website. Go to Cafe ULU, because we did pull our monies together. That's what it's about, to create Cafe ULU. Located here in Atlanta at 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. It's office hours. The coffee shop hours are Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday, Sunday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we have coffee. That's right, we have African coffee. Cameroon, Tanzanian, Kenyan, and Ethiopia, where coffee started. We also might have Uganda. Brother came in with them, Somalia, you know. Angola, rather. I'm sorry, not Somalia. Angolan, you know. There's other coffees that we've had, Panamanian, Nicaraguan, and, of course, Brazil. So we have coffee. We also have loose teas. And everything at Cafe ULU is produced by us. Everything is produced by us. So give them a call at 470-788-8124, 470-788-8124, or go online to CafeULU.com. Buy some coffee. Also, we have this great, delicious vitality drink, Ambrosia. That's right, Brother Novak Young, my good brother Novak Young. Ambrosia is a vitality drink. It is delicious. So, Akabit Institute, and I know I've seen some things online that are coming up with Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti. I will be announcing those as well. Akabit Institute, make your check or money order out to Akabit Institute, A-K-O-B-E-N Institute, P.O. Box 10786, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310, 30310. Or if you would like Cash App or PayPal, it's a $ Y-A-A-M, B-A-R-U-T-I, Baruti, to make your contribution. And believe me, it's deserving and it's truly needed. He is educating our children in the best way. Sister Gabby in Haiti. Sister Gabby, I met now a couple months ago, and she's been back in Haiti doing great work. She's in the northeast portion of Haiti in the rural area, and the work she is doing, phenomenal. I would suggest, and I would ask you to go online to check her out at sanjehaiti.org. Sanjay, SONJE-AYITI.org. Sanjehaiti.org. And they have a chicken farm. They're doing some chicken stuff and fruits and all kinds of good things. The educational, the schooling, the children in the uniforms. I mean, you know, we're talking about the rural areas of Haiti. In the rural areas of many countries, there's a lot of poverty. But if someone with the spirit of that sister comes in and does good work, they need to be supported. Another thing that needs to be supported is this platform that we're on. And I know you know that. This platform needs to be supported. So I want you to go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. blacktalkradionetwork.com. And when you just jump on the page on the right-hand side, scroll down and you'll see the donate to the Black Talk Radio Project 2019 Media Fund for Brother Scotty Reed. This is the number one Black Talk podcast in the nation. Not only do we want to keep it that way, we want to expand it when we need your help. This Saturday, my good brother Jabari Jumaane will be taking our brothers and sisters in the Los Angeles area. If you are in the Los Angeles area, it's the Black Conscious Caravan. The Black Conscious Caravan. The number to call Brother Jumaane is 323-292-5550. 293-292-5550. Brother Jabari Jumaane. Or if you want to go send them email, go on Facebook, AFIBA, AFIBA underscore center at hotmail.com. Check out Brother Jabari Jumaane. It's coming up this weekend. The Yenye Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Yenye Sesem. So it's the weekend, so I usually read the ones from this past weekend. And as usually, they're always good. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters. Brother Baruti just picked some very good quotes and anecdotes and so forth and proverbs and all kinds of good stuff. And, of course, with good information as he articulates them, some narratives. August 10th. If an African-centered liberation movement is to be successful, it must rescue the collective African mind and soul from the clutches of Eurocentric and non-Afrocentric ideology. Dr. Amos Wilson. Liberation does not just happen. It requires an intentional plan movement within which the problem has been articulated and the means of correction understood and agreed upon by all involved. Any movement designed to liberate Africans' minds and therefore African people must be informed by the magnitude and the tenacity of our mental bondage and the fact that we are and must be uncompromisingly African if we are to be free. I repeat. African people must be informed by the magnitude and the tenacity of our mental bondage and the fact that we are and must be uncompromisingly African if we are to be free. If not, no matter the effects or sporadic successes, it will never truly emancipate us. If one tether or a sliver link it to this cultural chaos remains, we will again be drawn back into its insanity. Affirm, I will not tolerate one tether, not one sliver, linked to this cultural chaos. Affirm, I will not tolerate not one tether, not one sliver linked to this cultural chaos. August 11th. Slavery attempts to make a man a brute. It treats him as a beast. Its terrible work is not finished until the ruined victim of its lust and pride and hatred is reduced to so low with tearful eyes and feeble voice, he faintly cries, I'm happy and content. I love this condition. Henry Highland Garnett. Conscious Africans make a distinction between capped slaves and people who are enslaved. Conscious Africans make a distinction between slaves and people who are enslaved. Of course, I will use enslaved periodically, but I use periodically. But most of the times I use the word captive. We are captives. Slavery produces a mental dysfunction in which individuals see themselves as property of those who control them. Slaves believe in the correctness of their oppression and exploitation and willingness and willing to participate in it. That's why I'm saying slaves. If you are a slave, you submit your will to a master. Enslaved individuals understand that they are only captives, only physically bond until they are able to free themselves. They are constantly at war against those who detain and oppress them. Most Africans are not slaves. They were enslaved. That has changed. There is a noticeable disturbing trend, an ongoing escalation in the proportion of Africans suffering from intense levels of mental-cidal self-hatred. The process of our Europeanization is continuing to increase and wreak havoc on African minds. Warriors must know the problem and its source in order to stop it. The wisdom of African teachers teaches us that when a reed is bent too far in one direction, it will have to be bent further in the other direction in order for it again to become straight. Let me repeat that. The wisdom of African teachers, and it teaches us that when a reed is bent too far in one direction, it will have to be bent even further in the other direction for it again to become straight. And that is our situation. Affirm, I reject all forms of slavery. Affirm, I reject all forms of slavery. Today, August 12th. A friend is one who helps and encourages you toward that which is good for you. A foe is one who hinders and discourages you from which that is good for you. Akil. We tried of detailing the Europeans' corrupt chaos, insanity, inhumanity, and the drift of spiritual death, the seemingly endless cleaning of thorn underbrush and vines rooted in quicksand and thick with poisonous snakes wears at us when we are determined to reclaim every single step along the path back home. It is a litany sometimes best left forgotten. However, time has taught us that this struggle is necessary because those of us who know we are African cannot travel this way alone. We know that returning is a communal venture. It requires as many willing and able, uncompromising African warriors as we can find to rebuild and define what has been lost but must be brought back to power. We have already overcome the fallacies that every other, even most Africans, must be included in the revolution for it to be successful. I repeat, we have already overcome the fallacy that every or even the most Africans must be It requires as many willing and able, uncompromising Africans as possible as we can find to rebuild and define what has been lost but must be brought back to power. We have already overcome the fallacy that every, even most Africans, must be included in the revolution for it to be successful. Here, let it suffice to say that effective unity does not precede consciousness. Effective unity does not precede consciousness. Consciousness is the foundation. Affirm, I honor my friends. Affirm, I honor my friends. I honor all those men and women who work hard to help African people. Please give us a call at 215-490-9832 to be part of the conversation today. 215-490-9832. A lot of stuff happening. How the hell did Epstein should have called his mother, signed Epstein's mother. Jeffrey Epstein, how the hell, you know, this is going to be another one of those, who you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? And you know, coming up next month, September 11th is my annual 9/11 inside job presentation, you know, to the point that come 2021, it'll be 20 years. And all those who are involved in that situation, they have to come up. They have to be brought out in the fore. And I know that a lot of the people are not going to believe that, because that's just how it is. They don't believe it. You know? I know that. But the bottom line is, at least as far as I'm concerned, it'll be said. Now, I'm anxious to hear, and I'm quite sure you probably are too, how they finagled this one. First, they said he was hung. You know, he's supposed to be under surveillance 24/7, 365, but unfortunately, at that very moment, and looked upon every half hour or whatever, but unfortunately at that time that wasn't happening. The cameras were off, I bet. There's no footage of that. And then, of course, Trump threw in the controversy of, he got some stuff on the Clintons, and he got some stuff on a whole bunch of other folks, you know. When he talked about Antonin Scalia, how he died, supposedly, this is the story on that, this is the theory on that one, was that Barack Obama told Antonin Scalia, I got some stuff on you I've been handed here about you and pedophilia. I did do a program some years ago on just a notion that there's a pedophilia ring by Europeans, Caucasians, British, Australians, which is, of course, is British too, and America, which of course is British too. You know, there was some kind of thing that they had going on, and one of the places that they were getting some of the young boys here in the States was Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska. And so one of the pieces I saw, this one dude, you know, he was adamant about what happened to him. And then they had this one Negro who was getting the boys from Boys Town and providing them to these rich Caucasians, you know. And then not only that, getting young girls, the sexual perversions and all the other stuff of this society of European dominant society is just sickening. But yet, because of how the society has developed and what it looks like, we are blinded by the lights, so to speak. Look at all of the, you know, all the amenities, all the glitz and glamour, and we get blinded. We don't understand how evil the system is, how rotten it is to its core. So today, or in the next few days, when they come out and talk about, you know, what happened to Jeffrey Epstein, how he died. And that's going to take a whole bunch of people off the hook. Now, of course, not his estate, because all the other people who were affected by Jeffrey Epstein who want money. In fact, they said, you have 1 year to make a claim against Jeffrey Epstein's state. So if you were a victim, some young girl, and, you know, she can go ahead and make her claim, and I don't know how it would be substantiated. He's dead. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. So I tell you, it's now you understand my reasons for wanting to get out, don't you? You know? Because to me, there is no reforming. There is no changing. I was watching the news today. And this one brother on there about you know, anti-racism, and it's something that can be. No, let me say this. Let me be real, real clear. There is no reforming. There is no changing. There is nothing different. There's nothing we can do to change the mindsets of Europeans and the attitude that they have about who they are and what they're about. Stop it. So I know the brother got the book out. He's a professor, a doctor something. Saw him on the news this morning. He had a little group thing they showed, and they're talking about racists and racism and who can be a racist. And then somebody said, you know, we can't be racist. We can be mean-spirited and bigoted. I had a conversation back in New Orleans. I was there in New Orleans with a young brother, and he was insisted that we could be racist. I'm trying to explain to him, we can't be racist. We can be mean-spirited and bigoted. There's only one form of racism in the world, because race is not even a real. I just read that to you this past Friday. Those functional definitions that I have of racism. It's not real. Race is not real. Europeans devised the concept of race, giving themselves a top position with everybody else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. Race isn't real. But it is real as a human construct. It is very real. And the attitude and the idea of race, the way it has been implemented by Europeans, has had a devastating effect, not just on Africans, but on the world. Because European, Caucasian extremism, I don't use the word white, and I don't use the word supremacy, because they're not white, and they sure as hell ain't supreme. I use the phrase European, Caucasian extremism, because they are very extreme. Racism, because that is something that they've devised. Europeans came up with this idea of race. Johann Blumenbach and Carol Linnaeus, you can look it up yourself. Caucasoid, Negroid, and Mongoloid. And privilege, because they seek privilege above all others. They're selfish and greedy, and they will not share. There will be, since the ending of physical captivity, but of course the worst captivity has been heaped upon us, and that is mental. But since physical captivity had ended, the Caucasians have utilized the methods of mental captivity into making some of us believe that we are part of this system too. Make some of us believe that we too sing America. Make some of us believe that I'm happy that Caucasians came and took us from Africa and enslaved us. I'm happy. I just read you the Henry Highland Garnett piece, didn't I? What it does? Let me read it to you again so you'd be clear. Slavery attempts to make a man a brute. It treats him as a beast. Its terrible work is not finished until the ruined victim of its lust and pride and adversity and hatred is reduced so low that with tears in their eyes and feeble voice, he faintly cries, I'm happy. I'm content. I love this condition. And that's the situation that we are in. And yet, we have the theology that makes us believe that has been given. I see, that's something that
when you don't question that, that's something that's really deep, because you believe that Christianity is historical and you believe that it's beyond white folks. They didn't give us that. That's something that has been there from the beginning. No, it's not. It's not the beginning of damn time. The advent of Christianity is recent. And everything that Christianity got is taken from others. There is no originality, and it's shown in hell ain't historical. It is a tool that Europe, they don't believe it. They don't believe it. It is a tool that they use. Look at the Bible. Look what the European Jews were able to do. To take, just say, the Bible, this is our land. Take this from the Palestinians, it is ours. And those are European Jews. Genetically, they have no claim to Palestine, to that land, none. They have more claim to Russia, Poland, the Khazars, the Ashkenazis. And they put that theology on us. Well, brothers and sisters, when you believe in things you don't understand, that great visionary Stevie Wonder told us best, you suffer. We believe in stuff because we've been trained to believe. Whatever the European says, so be it. I don't believe a damn thing. See, brothers and sisters, it must come to a point in our lives, individually and collectively, that we reject any and everything that Europeans say and do. Came to my life some time ago. I haven't always been this way. I too believe that somehow, some way, that we can appeal to Caucasians from a moral aspect, and we can make them respect and let us be a part of the society, and, you know, respect our humanity and all the things that we have suffered at their hands, and, you know, putting some on their mind to make them say, yeah, you know what, I'm right. You're right, and I apologize, and I want to make amends. I want to pay restitution. I want to pay reparations. I want to, let you share in this society that I took and made for myself, and I shaped it and I fashioned it in my image and interest. But now I understand that because of all the conflicts and things that are happening, we all sharing this together. I know that you have fought in every war that I have engaged in, and many of the wars, particularly recently, they're not a threat against this country. It's just that they're economic wars. So I get you as an African person to go some damn place that I say for you to go, Yugoslavia, Southeast Asia, wherever hell I send you, and you go fight there, and then you come back and you don't get a damn thing. I'll give you a GI Bill, give you a loan to go to school. But I ain't getting you nothing. It has to come a time where we have leadership that points us the way forward for African people, not leadership that consistently begs Caucasians and then constantly surprised and upset because of the false, when they make a claim that's a false negative or what is that term? But anyway, we get surprised that, damn, well, they did it. Why can't us? I mean, they let these folks go, but yet the brother they shoot, the brother they imprison. And still, we consistently believe that somehow that this system could enact fairness and justice and so forth, when the history proves otherwise. As Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. History. Look at the history. Look at the, see, our problem is, as African people, we need to look at history more than anything else, because it'll help us understand the situation that we're in today. And then therefore we can see and understand a better future that is independent, self-determining, liberating, and sovereign. Because that should be the future goal for African people. But the majority of African people here in this country and other places is assimilation, is integration, is go along to get along, is beg and plead for the crumbs off the damn table. Education should be about liberation. If the education that you are getting does not teach you to do for yourself, it's wrong. Here you have brothers and sisters spending millions and hundreds of millions. I don't know what I can imagine that the educational debt for us, I ain't talking about for everybody, I bet you for us is quite a few billion dollars. For us as African people going into these colleges and universities and all these startup educational institutions that were designed to rip you off. And yet here we are. Man, it's a shame, ain't it? It's a damn shame. The real damn shame, though, is our inability or unwillingness for us to see it. But see, I don't blame us for that. I blame this system for that, because it wants to keep you ignorant. It wants to keep you in a state of perpetual servitude. It wants to do that. It don't want you looking at your history. It don't want you to understand the glory that you once possessed and the great things that you do. It don't want that to happen for you. It wants you to continue to beg, to put you in the subservient position. Because in a capitalistic system, you got to have a whole bunch of people who ain't got a damn thing so the people up top can have everything. And now because of the capitalists, because of the capitalistic system, there's a shrinking of a so-called middle class. I think one of the things, as I look at the history, that was beneficial for the capitalistic system to thrive was the creation back in the day of a middle class. The New Deal, all those other programs coming out of the First World War and definitely out of the Second World War. But that's over. There's a squeeze on the middle class. Either you got it or you don't. That's what capitalism is. Either you got it, you got the capital, or you don't. And for us, as African people, it's even more tenuous, because everything is predicated on the goodness and the philanthropicness and the handouts of Europeans, of Caucasians, of white folks. And those are coming few and far between. You've heard me on this program many times talk about that 100% of us and what it means economically for us. 100% of us are at or below poverty. 100% of us. 40% of us, 40, is at or below poverty. Barely making it. So when they talk about these unemployment numbers have always been a fallacy. Always. I hope you understand that. So I don't want to hear Trump talking about, it's the lowest black unemployment. In fact, the only time your unemployment has been lower is when you've been enslaved. That's when your black unemployment was the lowest, when you were enslaved. You know, yeah, the lowest black unemployment. That's crazy. The other 40% is 2 to 3 paychecks away from being in poverty. and I've been saying it for years, but last year when they had I'm having trouble today, y'all. Maybe take me some ginkgo biloba. I'm supposed to take it. I keep forgetting. But man, the shutdown. So when they had the shutdown, there were a lot of families that were very concerned because they live paycheck to paycheck. They're barely making it, even though they're, especially government employees, because most of the people, a lot of our people, a lot of American African people work for the government. I work for the government. I work for the city of Milwaukee. If I'm a teacher, I work for the city of Milwaukee. A police officer, city of Milwaukee. Garbage man, city. See what I'm saying? And a lot of our people here in Atlanta, the same thing. Here in Atlanta, the same thing. And so that group who are relying on those paychecks each week, that other 40%, and some might be in the private sector, but in the private sector, they ain't making no money because they might be just making probably two or three jobs, two Burger King jobs. I don't know. It's a struggle. That's 80%. The 20% of the 20, 10 of the 20 are doing well. They got money. They have jobs. Maybe have businesses. Maybe they're like me who are retired with a decent pension. You know, they live in gated communities, cul-de-sacs, you know, and the like. You know, so. And so, you know, it's interesting that these people, they feel so entitled. You know, they feel good about themselves. And some of them have an attitude that, hey, I got mine. Get yours. And so those who didn't get theirs, that's their fault. Then there's another 10%. And these are the people that are doing exceedingly well. They're doing exceedingly well. They are, you know, professional athletes, entertainers of a wide variety. A lot of them live here in Atlanta. They came to Atlanta because it's can get a nice place for a lot less than they could on the East Coast or West Coast. And so Atlanta now has become Hollywood of the South. A lot of in music, in hip hop, and so forth. So, but that's just 20% of our people. And so, we're willing. The 20% are willing to say, kick the 80% to the curb, because in America, it's about the land of the individual. It's about me and mine. To hell with you and yours. The land of the individual. America perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. There was never a time that in this society that this society was not violent. Violent from its inception. And I know as kids, I grew up in, when you know, the decade you're born in, the following decade is when you truly grow up. So I grew up in the 60s. I was born in the 50s. I grew up in the 60s. I remember the 60s very well. Remember half of the 50s. I was born in the early part of the 50s. You know, one of the things of the 50s was TV, black and white TV and programs. And, of course, my mother cheering for the Milwaukee Braves when they were in Milwaukee when they beat the New York Yankees in 57. But, yeah. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break. I need a break. I need a break. When we come back, we'll talk about this economic situation for us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You hold on and you stay with us because we're going to be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling,
hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You have listened to Down to the Bone, Staten Island Groove, Down to the Bone. For a friend of mine, it's her birthday today, Sister Felicia Manns, a retired fire captain of a Fairfax County Fire Department in Virginia. She lives in Richmond, Virginia, and so it's her birthday today, and we wish her a happy birthday for you. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, here on Mondays. I'm here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Right after my program on Monday and Wednesdays is the Black People Matrix with Franklin Jones from 1 to 3. And then Monday evening is Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8, followed by Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9, followed by Conversation Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey at 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesday, also from 8 to 10, is Revive with Sister PLC. On Thursdays, Relationships with Joy and Troy at 7 p.m. And then on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, you know it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday, Revive with Sister PLC from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then Sunday evening, it's once again Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 7 p.m. Every Monday through Friday, the Warren Ballantyne Show right here on Time for an Awakening Media at 10 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Time for an Awakening Media. You know, in this country, people move about thinking that it's someplace better. And, of course, here in Atlanta, I live in Atlanta, and people have been coming to Atlanta, still coming. The city of Atlanta and its size of the city is small. But the metropolitan area, because the city of Atlanta is in three different counties, Fulton County, DeKalb County, Cobb, Gwinnett, Clayton, and all of them have a piece of Atlanta. Majority of Atlanta is in Fulton County, and they all make claims. So the metropolitan area is like about, almost 5 million people. The city is only over 400,000. Only 400,000 people in the city of Atlanta. But people have been moving to the South because, you know, they believe the economics, particularly in from the Midwest, the Rust Belt, and particularly some of our people, because a lot of those jobs are definitely gone. They ain't coming back, you know. And so people look for, and then there's a lot of sisters who have moved down here, and sisters are doing well, some of them, and they don't want no more sisters down here because there's a dearth of men down here. It's 8 to 1. 8 to 1 here in Atlanta. So it's like, we moving down here. But sisters, you know, in fact, the highest educated group in this country now is American African women. That's what they say. The most degreed group in this country is American African women. Now, the greatest threat, now who's running it? Caucasian men. And the greatest threat to Caucasian men ain't American African women. The greatest threat to Caucasian men is American African men or African men. And that's why we suffer in this situation as badly as we do. That's why we're well overrepresented in all the social ills than anybody else. But the sisters, they give them a job. So I'm going to talk about the South. Talk about this economic situation that everybody, you know, in Atlanta, because, you know, Atlanta is perceived as what? The Mecca for us. Atlanta's the place to grow, place to grow. Atlanta's the place to go. I don't know about grow. For some, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to be real. There are some people who have came here, and through their perseverance and willingness, they made their niche. But that is a lot of times things about us that we just want to make our niche, our comfortable corner in what the cracker has, excuse me, and what the European has. And that's what we do sometimes. The South has the fastest growing economies and the least economic mobility for the poor. This was an article that was in the Atlanta Black Star. David Love, one of the staff members of Atlanta Black Star, 2 years ago, put this out April of 2017. The South has the fastest growing economies and the least economic mobility for the poor. And who's most likely to be poor? The South is booming from an economic standpoint. For proof of this, one need only look at the cities such as Atlanta, Austin, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, Dallas, Texas, Orlando, Florida, and Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area to understand there is a new South. Of the 20 cities listed on Forbes' fastest growing cities in 2016 list, eight were in the South. Despite this reality, poor people in the South are not sharing in this growth. It is in Dixie, the former Confederacy, the Jim Crow states, where children have the toughest chance of getting ahead. This is where people have the lowest levels of economic mobility, also commonly known as the American dream, meaning that the poor will likely remain poor. Charlotte is a case in point and reflective of a larger trend throughout the region. The city, a hub for the financial services sector and the 13th fastest growing city, according to Forbes, is not a place for the poor to thrive. There is segregation with Caucasians and more affluent people living in the South of the city and predominantly poor American, African, and Latino people living in the North and the West of the city of Charlotte. According to the Equality Opportunity Project, Charlotte ranks at the very bottom of America's 50th largest cities in terms of economic mobility. In Charlotte, children born in the bottom 20% of income distribution have only a 4.4% chance of making it to the top 20% of the economic ladder. So that if you're born poor, you're more than likely to stay poor. This compares to 10.8% of children in Salt Lake City and 12.9% of children in San Jose. So those children in Salt Lake and San Jose have a much better chance, even though they were born poor, to come up out of it. Similarly, in 2012, a report from the Pew Charitable Trust found that while eight states, primarily in New England and in the Midwest, have higher upward mobility and lower downward mobility than the national average. Maryland, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Utah, nine southern states have lower than average upper mobility and higher downward mobility. That means that they're poor and they're going to get poorer. These states are Louisiana, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Texas. At the Network for Southern Economic Mobility has noted, more than 50% of America's living in high poverty communities are in the South. 50% of Americans living in high poverty communities are in the South. Poverty rates are higher in the South, with one quarter of children living in poverty as opposed to the national average of one-fifth. According to the Children's Defense Fund, based on federal data, Florida is the only southern state whose minimum wage exceeds the federal lower limit of $7.25. Red states, particularly the southern states, depend more on government than blue states. For example, 50 state data analysis from the Wallet Hub found that Mississippi receives about $3 for every dollar it pays to the federal government, while Alabama and Louisiana receive slightly more than $3. Florida receives over $4.50 from the federal government for every dollar it sends to the IRS. And South Carolina receives $7.87. Yet, the former Jim Crow states tend to eschew government the most and treat their people the worst regarding health care, education, and other measures. So the states get money. They get money. But, of course, it's not distributed properly. The distribution of it is, as everything else, unequal. The deeply impoverished in the urban areas of the Deep South find themselves out of luck and with nowhere to turn in a region where unemployment is already high and wages are low. As the Washington Post reported in 2015, the poor have been pushed out of the center of the metropolitan areas and away from employment due to rising costs of real estate and harmful government policies. Here in Atlanta, the gentrification that has been going on. Like, once again, this article is 2 years old. And this is just, once again, everything else is just as germane today as it was when it was written 2 years ago. Cash assistance programs and other social safety net measures have been decimated, and the southern poor are more likely to be single parents with no hope and no help, as 5 of the 6 states with the highest percentage of single parents are in the South. Often displaced by the center of town, they rely more on public transportation, which is of the worst quality in the nation. Caucasian Southern Republicans oppose mass transit system, keeping low-income and poor American Africans trenched in poverty with little opportunity for advancement. Opposition to spending for infrastructure, social service, and other initiatives reflect a Republican mindset against government programs on the assumption that they will help poor and American African people. The legacy of racial income inequality that plagues the South to this day is a testament to the enduring presence of captivity and the Jim Crow segregation and a system built on dehumanization and exploitation of African people and the culmination of Caucasian wealth and the accumulation of Caucasian wealth. The South has had hundreds of years to normalize the inequality and desensitize itself to the injustices inflicted upon those of African descent. Has its white elites have thwarted any attempt at unity between and they would definitely thwart any unity between working class people. As Allison Zant wrote in Facing South, what is wrong with the South is what's wrong with America. What went wrong in centuries of enslavement and systematic discrimination that resulted in the immense disparities we see today. But most news stories don't capture that context. Our region's history of economic dependence on free forced labor and then later on cheap exploitative labor meant that we were menial opportunities for wealth creation for those outside the economic elite, and particularly for people of color. And there has been an unequal investment in community resources that are beneficial to the entire population, like schools, transportation, and healthcare. Even in the absence of legalized racial segregation, segregation in the South is maintained along highly demarcated lines of poverty and affluence, which are in turn color-coded. This is why inequality remains endemic to the South, as many African people who are left behind in the booming economy and they are unable to share in its fruits. Systems of oppression will continue to do what they know, and they continue to do what they've done. So, I mean, the idea that all of this is happening and all this is a blessing, the idea is not a fact.
Yeah. You know, I know that many of us want to believe that somehow, and in fact, especially for those Christian folks, somehow, some way, just pray to Jesus and rely on Jesus. Jesus is the answer. And this madness that we're experiencing, it'll all be over. This is a recent article from the Philadelphia Tribune. Atlanta. An article in Philadelphia Tribune. Ernie Suggs and Jennifer Peoples wrote this. It's August 6th this year. It says, Atlanta known as Black Mecca, but job numbers tell a different story. Showed his brother Thomas Williams on his way to work at Wendy's in Marietta. Williams, who has a master's degree in finance, can't find a job in his field. It's a picture taken from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thomas Williams woke up early on a recent morning for his first day of work. The first day of work has grown quite common for him. There was the first day of work as a financial planner in 2013. The first day of work as an investment analyst in 2017. Now in 2019, a 35-year-old Virginian with a bachelor's degree from Virginia Tech and a master's degree in finance from the University of Georgia was taking a Cobb County bus to his latest job, flipping burgers at Wendy's. I had to do it because I needed to do something, Thomas Williams said. The unemployment rate for American Africans at 6% is reaching historic lows. Trump often touts the rate of at rallies to try to sway American African voters heading into the 2020 election. But the rate is still roughly double that of Caucasians. It is a gap that has remained consistent and constant for more than a half a century. Though Republican and Democratic White Houses, Vietnam, the tech bubble, the Great Recession, and now the longest job expansion on record. The gap is even wider in Atlanta. Celebrated for decades as the Black Mecca and the city of American African professionals, the city's jobless rate were 11.5% of American African residents, but just 2.5% for Caucasians in 2017, the most recent years of comparative data, according to the Brookings Institute. We are still not in a place where we should be celebrating, Andre Perry, a Brookings fellow, said. Put it this way, if these numbers reflect Caucasians, they would be up in arms. When you look under the hood, American Africans are still in a recession. American Africans trail their Caucasian counterparts not only in access to jobs, but also access to high-paying jobs, livable wage jobs, self-sustaining jobs. So Williams, who lost his car and apartment in 2017, he rides the bus. I did what I was taught to do. I went to college, got educated, and worked hard to make something of myself. I went to further myself, work in my field, and I have an impact on society, but it's been tough. What did I do wrong? Well, Brother Williams, the jobless rate for American Africans has declined steadily since the Great Recession from a high of 16.8 in March of 2010. But the improvement is relative. The U.S. American African jobless rate of 6% in June was nearly double the overall unemployment rate of 3.7, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. American Africans are less likely to have jobs than Hispanics and Caucasians. What is ours? Over 6. Hispanics are 4.3. Caucasians are 3.3. And Asians are 2.1. Asians are more employed than anybody.
In 2018, more than one in five American African teenagers were unemployed, almost double that of Caucasians. There has been a 10-year recovery, and the gap has not closed, said a senior economist at the Center for American Progress. We need to be focusing on the fact that structural racism is underlying all of this. We need to acknowledge, then combat that. There is nothing about being American African that makes you less unemployable. Yeah, in America it does, because that's who and what they see. It is so damn sickening that even American businesses who don't want, because they want to have business with everybody, and they realize in this kind of situation that we will, you know, be looked at disparagingly. So they don't want their potential customers to know that this business is African-American. So they'll put Caucasians on the literature, on the handout, on the flyers, on the pamphlets. They even put a Caucasian as a receptionist. They'll even put the Caucasian as a representative from the company. Economists and scholars point to issues like the criminal justice system, K-12 education, access to higher education, housing, all areas where American Africans still lack equality and contributing factors. These disparities don't just influence jobless numbers, but also the quality of jobs and even longer gaps in wealth between Caucasians and American Africans. Devon Sumby, a 25-year-old graduate of Pebble Brook High School in Mableton, couldn't afford college and now can't find a break in the tech field where he wants to be a game developer. So he bounces between minimum wage jobs. Right now, he is a crew leader at a movie theater in his fourth job, not including freelance gigs since high school. I have a job, but I don't wake up in the morning and jump for joy. Sumbri said, it is hard to work on things you want when you have to work on things you have to do. Good one. In 2016, the minimum wealth for an American African household was one-tenth of that of Caucasians. One-tenth. The minimum wealth was $17,100 compared to $170,810, according to the Pew Research Center. The median wealth for an African-American household is just one-tenth of the Caucasians. It has been said that the income gap, the wealth gap, is so huge it would take over 200 years to close it, to find some economic equality. What it's saying is that the Caucasian would be frozen at that particular point, and in incremental raises and so forth, excuse me, that we would finally come to that point where there's some economic equality. Even American African households with college degrees had only 68,000 in wealth compared to, gets even worse. This way, even with college degrees, ours is $68,200. The Caucasians is $398,170. When Trump talks about how great the job numbers are for American Africans, he's talking about the vast number of people who have low paying jobs, said Bob Holmes, an Atlanta political science and former state rep. You can be employed, but if you're only making $8 an hour, that job doesn't allow you to live a life where you can improve your situation. Williams, the fast food worker, said when he graduated from University of Georgia with that master's degree in 2013, he should have been making between $60 and $65 based on the market. 60 to 65,000 based on the market and job. But he started out making just 40,000. It poses the question, he said, was it even worth going to school? This is what Maurice Herring is thinking. Maurice Harrell. He has been out of work since November, a former senior manager at Home Depot. Harrell recently went back to school to get a master's degree in sports management. He assumed that with his years of working for a Fortune 500, coupled with the fact that he played football at the University of Georgia and briefly with the San Diego Chargers, or the L.A. Chargers now, he would find, oh, you know what? They probably were San Diego. They only been in L.A. for 2 years. Briefly with the L.A. Chargers, he would find a job in somebody's athletic department. The 47-year-old spends his morning working out and his afternoons applying for jobs. He said he has called every college in Atlanta with an athletic program and hasn't gotten a sniff. I'm willing to work my way up from the bottom, Harrell said. Not getting the phone call has been the most disappointing. When he re-entered the job market, Harrell had saved enough to last about 6 months. He gave himself until the end of July to find something in sports. If he comes up empty, he expects to find a job in logistics. North Carolina transplant still searching for Black Mecca. Find a job in Atlanta is supposed to be easy. At least that's the perception of a city run by Black politicians and many of them educated as Black colleges. In a city where rappers and movie star sightings in their Lamborghinis.
In Western astrology,
In a city where rappers and movie star sightings in their Lamborghinis are as natural as having American African doctor, lawyers, or CEOs walking next to you on the Beltline. The first time I visited Atlanta was in 1994, and it was the place to be, said Deanna Hampton. North Carolina native. So many American African people were living in these nice houses in places like Stone Mountain. Everybody was in real estate or retiring early. The Olympics were coming. Atlanta was the Black Mecca. But there is more behind the glitz. In the 5-year period ending in 2017, the overall jobless rate in the city of Atlanta was 3.1. for Caucasian residents, but it was 15.5 for American African residents, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, based on America Community Survey data. The jobless rate in all of Georgia for American Africans during that same period was lowered at 11.5, although it was still considered higher than for Caucasians, I'm quite sure. And understand about jobless rate. That's why I'm saying those numbers are a fallacy. The jobless rates, those statistical numbers are for those who are looking for jobs and who registered with unemployment. If right now I go out looking for a job, I wouldn't be in that statistic because I'm not going to the unemployment office. I'm not going to jobs. I'm just looking for a job. So I wouldn't be in that. And there are many people like that. Comparative data going back further than in time for Atlanta and harder to track. Comparative data going further back in time for Atlanta are harder to track. However, the gap in Fulton County has persisted over decades. In 1970, the county's unemployment rate for Caucasians and for American Africans were 2.6 and 4.5 respectively. In 2010, the rates are 7.3 and 20% respectively, according to the University of Minnesota. Holmes, a retired political science professor at Clark Atlanta, said the American African Mecca image has always been fraught. He published an annual report, Status of American African Atlanta, between 1993 and 2005. Nothing, he said, has changed. Everything is relative, said Holmes, who served in Georgia's House of Representatives for 34 years. It was never a reality. It was a public relations. It's all about public relations. Holmes said many Atlanta jobs are low paying service industry like fast food and conventions, and that more American African Atlanteans work these jobs than high paying ones. Eventually, he said, a lot of folks just drop out of the labor force. That's what I'm saying. They dropped out of that. They're not that part of that statistic. Hampton, a North Carolina native, finally moved to Atlanta in 2014 from Winston-Salem with a degree in business administration in hand and a nice job as a senior accountant at a large manufacturing firm. When I got there, there was a lot of networking and I had everything going for me, said Hampton, who also interned in the Clinton White House in 1994 in the Office of Presidential Personnel. I thought this is it, but it really wasn't. Hampton's last job, which she said got and lost through a series of reorganizations, was in 2013 as a recycling analysis for Coca-Cola. Since then, she has been working on a series of contracting jobs, usually in finance or project management. She hasn't had a contract since April. I've been applying for permanent positions all of this time, but the hard part is, so has everybody else. I'm just one of 10,000 resumes out there. It's very discouraging. The path that Williams set for herself veered for good in 2016 when he lost his job as a stockbroker. He waited for something to happen. He started driving for Uber and Lyft. Then he worked as a seasonal department store cashier. He followed that up with a seasonal stint lifting boxes and loading trucks in warehouses. He answered phones at a call center. But when finance jobs didn't come, he got evicted from his apartment and had his car repossessed, costing him his ride-sharing gig. The Virginia Tech Hokie and Georgia Bulldog is still trying to find a job in finance while living in an extended stay hotel or motel. Until then, he does odd jobs, day jobs like cleaning hotel rooms, and rides the bus to go flip burgers. I never thought my life would be like this. It's been frustrating and disheartening, Williams said. I'm qualified, experienced, and educated, and have had leadership roles, and I can't even get a job interview. Man, the reality of the situation here in Atlanta. Everybody talking about all the, it's just so great. It's the black Mecca. It's the black Mecca, y'all. It's just great. There is and never has been and never will be any Meccas, any utopians in an environment run by Europeans. Let me repeat. For African people, wherever African people are, and if there's Caucasians, Europeans, just like Dr. Bobby Wright said, this defies all laws of probability. Wherever they are and we are, they're in a position of authority and control, and we are in a subservient position. It defies all laws of probability. And because they've dominated us and they've captured our minds, they put a vice grip on our minds, many people can't think the way me and many others are thinking, that being to hell with Caucasians, to hell with this system that they imposed upon us. We do what we can to live in it until we can get better. And what we try to do is to make sure that we educate and inform and enlighten. We are at war for the minds of our people. We're trying desperately to help our people recapture their African minds, to reclaim their African minds. And what's interesting is that the Caucasian has shown you multiple times he don't give a damn about you. I just read those statistics. But those statistics could have been read 20 years ago, 40 years ago. The same thing. The article itself said here in Atlanta, nothing has really fundamentally changed. There's the perception. There's no doubt there's some people, particularly I would say 20, 30 years ago, maybe more, that left the North, came South, particularly 20, 30 years ago, because that's when things started happening in the Midwest. Factories closing, manufacturing closing, and so forth, causing a lot of people to leave again. Because, you know, we left here, my folks left here at the turn of the last century. My mother was born in Milwaukee in 1926. They left early. Most of her people went to Chicago. I don't know why my grandfather had to go to Milwaukee, though, whatever. But the bottom line is nothing has changed. And yet we keep holding out hope. We keep praying and wishing. God blesses the child that's got his own. We keep begging for somebody else's. We have never had and never will have our own here. This is not ours. It's theirs. And there's nothing. And I know we say it's just as much ours as theirs because we helped build this. Just remind me of that Richard Pryor one. Why don't they talk about us? We fought the Indians. Shut up, man. What you going to get the Indians mad at us too? Why don't they talk about it? We fought the Indians. Just like everything else. We want credit for what. Brothers and sisters, you get no credit in Europeans' reality. You get what you get. And that's what this is, the Europeans' reality. I will say this and say it again. I'd rather live in a world of my own choosing and struggle in that world than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. I'd rather struggle in a world of my own choosing than to be a fool in somebody else's dream. This is the Europeans' dream. This is the Caucasian's dream. And in his dream, it is a nightmare. This is a nightmare for us. And will always be that. We have a caller, 464.
Hey, OC. What's up, brother?
Hey, Jay, how you doing? I listened to you last night.
Hey, I'll talk to you about that off the air, man, because there's more to that than meets the eye.
Okay.
You know.
Okay,
brother. But listen, let me say this to you. That's just the norm. That's for our people what you're talking about.
Right.
And we don't understand it and we don't accept it. Now the most egregious thing of it all is that black folks got power in Atlanta, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
So whereby if black folks are supposed to be the dominant culture of Atlanta, have all of the key positions and all of that. Why are people doing so bad?
Because
are only the crony friends of the so-called elite supposed to get the job and not everyday people? So if you don't know nobody, you can't get a job. No institutions are being built and things of that nature.
Well, see, Jay,
I mean, when are we going to tell the truth about it?
See, Jay, like everywhere else, there's a perception and then there's the reality. The perception, of course, that it is saying that it's the black Mecca, all these things that are happening there. You got the Tyler Perry Studios. You got this, that, and the other. You know, you got black faces in high places and so forth, particularly in the city of Atlanta. But the reality is that's just the governance of it. The financial is still run by the Caucasians who have been entrenched here in Atlanta for decades. You see? And so that's why the dynamics have never changed. And that's why also that the poverty, that the chances of getting out of it are still, if you were born in it, it's still not, your chances of not even getting out of it are relatively good, even here in Atlanta, where supposedly you have more chances and opportunities. But the reality is that's not the case. And so, we want to paint that particular picture. In fact, I read a piece where some sister was saying, y'all stop coming here to Atlanta. She's already, we're 8-1. There ain't enough men here anyway. Y'all stop coming here to Atlanta, you know? I'm sorry, Jay, what did you say? Jay, you're breaking up tremendously on me. What did you say it again? Hang up and call back. Hang up and call back. I think that might be the best. Hang up and call back. I couldn't hear Jay. He was really breaking up pretty bad. So I was wondering. So, yeah, you know, the reality is that we have a situation that that we hope and pray that some way and somehow we will be treated fairly and justly and equitably, and that's just never. That's not in the Caucasian's nature. That's not how he evolved to treat people equitably. All right, Jay, how you doing? You're back with me. 646.
Yeah, man. Sorry, my phone was off. But listen, what I was trying to say was that in Atlanta, there's more homosexuals, males, than there is any other place in the United States, from what they're saying.
Well,
so how could a woman really expect to get a male?
Well, that's true. Atlanta is the American African capital of homosexuality for men and women. There's a lot of lesbians here as well, very prominent.
Right.
So, you know, but even at that, it's just that because of the influx of women, and particularly women are the most, in fact, in the United States, it has been stated, you know, I don't know the truthfulness of it, that there are more the one group with the most degrees are American African women. That's what they're saying. Yeah. Well, that's definitely.
I would say so.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely sure here. I remember on Facebook they said there are more black men getting degrees that are black men in prison, and I know that was some bull. There are more of us in prison through mass incarceration than us in colleges spending that kind of money getting a degree. Let's be real.
Oh, this is the thing. The one thing I could say about Maynard Jackson when he was the mayor of Atlanta, during that period of time, he did produce a lot of black millionaires and all of that. Matter of fact, I think the Russell Construction Company at one time was America's biggest black business. And from my understanding, they're still in existence doing pretty good.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, but, no, because Herman Russell passed. And
right.
Unfortunately, when Herman Russell passed, his fact, you know, I
don't
go by
tell
their
me the company went
right.
to hell once he died.
Yeah, the children didn't maintain it. It's still
oh,
in existence,
God.
Yeah. But they had to get rid of the Pascals and then the hotel. They have a building across the street, and that's where they're going to have a American African entrepreneurial center developed there. But no, you're right, and Atlanta was doing great under Mayor Jackson. He insisted upon of us getting contracts for the Olympics, insisted upon
now,
us getting contracts.
Let me say this to you because I know time is short. When they had the black man here, this Negro old bourgeoisie boot-licking foot still no good dogged head bushy Negro David Dinkins. He looked out for some of his friends, but black folks didn't really get in the position to do serious things that they should have been. You know why? Because of one thing. Whenever a black man becomes in a position of so-called authority within politics, he ain't never gonna do a damn thing for his own. Your boy Puff, the Magic Negro Obama, is a prime example of that. Whenever you see a mayor, a black mayor of a city, black folks ain't gonna get nothing. It's history. History proves it. You got all of these black mayors of these cities and everything, and they do dastardly things like that no good Negro good in Philadelphia. They do the type of things that he did to our people. The bottom line is, you can't show me right now, and I'm going to be honest and say it, and I know people will get annoyed with it. You can't show me where there's a black mayor in any city where black people are flourishing over any other ethnic group. The last time it happened on any scale was with Maynard Jackson in Atlanta. Maybe a little bit with Coleman.
Right, in Detroit.
Maybe
exactly.
A little.
Yeah, and
maybe
I was going
to be a little.
Yeah, I was
but
in.
No place else.
Yeah, I was in
no
Detroit.
No place else. And that's, and the bottom line is, that shows you the mental sickness of us as a people, that we can never get in a position of power and authority and do for ourselves before we do for others. We always put others in a better position than us.
Well, see, the
and
other thing, though, too,
so
is, see, the other thing, too, Jay, is that these are government positions and who runs the government, whether it's on a local level, state level, or federal level. And so a lot of times you're right. We're just figureheads in those situations, and our condition doesn't improve measurably at all, even though we've had an American African mayor or American African county exec or administrator. You know, I mean, we've had. We've had two.
Are nothing. This is the, let me sum the Negro up to you. Negroes just want to be in a position to be seen and thought of as having some sort of power. It's the same thing what's going on with the reparation movement. If you knew things that a lot of people don't know, the same Negroes that are preaching so much about reparations and things of that nature are sabotaging things that are going on to improve things. But that's the history. But nobody never wants to look at history, because yeah, the one thing is, history always repeats itself. It's the history.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not fooled by these people. See, because I'll stand on this. If you've been doing something for 40 years, and in those 40 years you really haven't achieved nothing, and then somebody new comes along and put pressure not only on you but on others, and you attack them individuals, you're showing me what you're about, because those are the individuals you need to be trying to
yeah,
sit with to try and improve on the methods that you've been doing and improve on the methods that they're trying to do and come together collectively.
Right. Right.
To achieve one goal. But we don't think like that. Because you know something? Every group has to have a head Negro in charge. And in the end, when it's all said and done, the head Negro in charge gets nothing but FaceTime, and
yeah,
the people get nothing but crumbs.
There you go.
Because there's nothing tangible.
But especially,
that moves
especially
in
this system,
government.
Especially Hotep. In this system, but all around. Hotep, dear Brother Jay, you have a blessed day, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Brothers and sisters, I end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Bibi Fahorio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahorio, dear brothers.
Peace. Take care.